Hello everyone, I'm happy to be here and share some thoughts thanks to Sam Govia who has invited me to be present. The resolution of the UN recognizes that reconciliation processes are particularly necessary and urgent in countries and regions of the world which have suffered or are suffering situations of conflict. Reconciliation does not happen in a vacuum. The whole international community needs to take an active role in peacekeeping and peace building, in disarmament, sustainable development, the promotion and protection of human rights, rooted in the inalienable dignity of every person, democracy, the rule of law and governance, all requirements that open the way to reconciliation. These are some of the elements that the resolution presents. The method for approaching reconciliation is dialogue, and the goals set out by the resolution, ambitious as they are, indicate that there is a deep aspiration in most persons to live without fear and suspicion in a human community that values a creative and peaceful interaction with others across religions, convictions, and cultural differences. The political community is engaged in the search for solutions, confronting the tangled interests that often neutralize the best efforts undertaken to reconcile warring parties. But the work of reconciliation goes beyond power politics. In recent years, a clear awareness has developed that reconciliation is an ongoing commitment for civil society, for churches and voluntary groups, for researchers and universities. The reason seems to be the conviction that in the long run, lasting peace cannot be imposed, but it has to be the fruit of individual and community choices. The process includes self-interest and technical skills, cooperation and joint search for truth and justice. The word reconciliation itself comes from the long tradition of religion, which maintained that forgiveness can and should reintegrate a person into the community and the community into the larger body of all believers and makes possible the journey from community to communion. Change is thus implicit in reconciliation, and forgiveness is a transformative inner change of the person that makes her aware that other people also can change. And the actual change becomes like a test that reconciliation is effective. I will just briefly sketch out the way of reconciliation within the Catholic tradition. The involvement of the Catholic Church in reconciliation initiatives moves along a continuum that basically embraces three major steps, grounding reconciliation in the core message of the Gospel, God reconciling the world in Christ, and sharing this good news with the world through teaching and liturgical proclamation. Two, the daily engagement of the faith community in reaching out in service to everybody in need, and to structure this engagement in specific moments and crises through more formal reconciliation functions. And three, occasional diplomatic action that involves mediation and reconciliation between states. The links that unifies all these various efforts is the common foundation on which they rest, the belief that the human family is one and has a common destiny in God's plan, and in the injunction of the gospel, go first and be reconciled with your brother. So there is a plurality of practical models of action that are utilized. At the diplomatic level, for example, in 1978, the direct involvement of the Holy See led to a diplomatic solution of the confrontation that existed between Argentina and Chile. There was a risk of war, but the mediation of the Pope made it possible to reach a treaty of friendship that avoided this clash. Another level of action for reconciliation is at the national level of the bishops' conferences. They provide their services to encourage the reconciliation, the reestablishment of peace, and they contribute through their teaching, through their direct involvement, even in political action sometimes, to avoid conflict or to reestablish peace. For example, in the recent crisis in Madagascar of these days, the bishops of the country call for a day of prayer to calm the emotions of all parties. Another case is the Conference of the Catholic Bishops of Colombia that has led to the National Coalition Conciliation Commission, which has played a very important role in peacekeeping in that country. This commission was created by the president of the Colombian Episcopal Conference in 1995 as an autonomous and independent entity with the fundamental objective of generating condition of trust between the government and the various insurgent movements in order to reach a negotiated political solutions to the Colombian armed conflict. A fundamental pillar of the Commission's policy is the conviction that in order to achieve genuine and lasting peace, Colombia requires a negotiated solution to the armed conflict as well as the active participation of its civil society in building the groundwork for a nation in which peace is supported by equality and social justice. Peace and reconciliation in northern Uganda is seeing the local bishop. That's another level of reconciliation making, playing a prominent role amidst one of the world's most gruesome conflicts. He has been instrumental in moving the peace process forward and serve as an official observer in that process. Catholic lay persons have also been instrumental for major reconciliation initiatives. In fact, according to Vatican Council II, the role of reconciliation is primarily the role of lay people. I'll give you the example of the Saint Egidio community. One country where Saint Egidio, Saint Giles in English, has been particularly active has been Mozambique, where it was able, through patient and long work, to bring about reconciliation between the government forces and the RENAMO to create a new beginning for that country. Throughout the world, the Catholic Church often, together with other churches and Christian groups, and individuals, and even with other faiths, carries out its mission of reconciliation in a variety of forms. The effectiveness of this work is not easily measurable. At times, there are evident and immediate results that catch the eye. More often, the work is simply part of the daily service and goes unnoticed, but it can and does change lives. Neither is such work limited to developing countries, but also it works in developed countries, for example, between the new immigrant communities and the local population. Today, the need for reconciliation as a basis for peace remains an urgent priority. Without genuine reconciliation, war can recur with all too often frequent regularity. There is an obvious need to further reflect upon and elaborate a doctrine of jus post bellum. What do we do? How is the international community, the UN, all the other international structures going to develop a humanitarian legislation that takes care of the situation at the end of a war or of a conflict? Because that's where reconciliation needs to be built up. Religion can be a powerful force to prevent such a phenomenon of recurring violence. In its work of reconciliation, the Catholic Church makes use of three specific and inspiring resources. It's Christian theology, its ethical framework and its social teaching, and its transnational nature, even though it is rooted in the local communities. As a conclusion, let me say this, let me allow to quote Madeleine Albright, former U.S. Secretary of State. She says that faith-based organizations have more resources, more skilled personnel, a longer attention span, more experience, more dedication, and more success in fostering reconciliation than any government. I hope this is true.